Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
You're listening to a man whose work is never done.
In a job like yours, even when it's finished, there's always one more thing to do.
And his job is to make your job easier.
It's a very difficult job, and the only way to get through it is we all work together as a team. And that means you do everything I say.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after. Thank you very much for hanging around with me today. 800-531-3815, toll free coast to coast. And my website is www.jbsba.com. Tim Liversedge is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. He's a new friend. I hope it won't be his last time to visit with us, but it certainly is his first time. Tim is a filmmaker, and he's a citizen of Africa. He's made a program that is going to be on nature in the next couple of weeks. We're going to tell you about that in just a little bit, called Kalahari. And let's just get him on the show here and get him in here to tell us a little bit about what he's been working on. Tim, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you very much, Jim.
It's good to have you here, Tim. And some of my audience knows, they who've been listening to me for a long time, they know, Tim, how much I love anything that has to do with animals, plants, nature, anything to do with the weather. I love any of that. To me, the things that are going on around us, actually, I think nature is much more interesting than people are. And so that's the reason why I spend a lot of time studying it and reading about it as much as I can. And so when I had an opportunity to have you on the show to talk to us about this this very interesting part of the world, the Kalahari, I jumped at the chance. And so I'm glad you're here. Tell us where the Kalahari Desert is.
Yeah. Sure. Well, you know, I know also you're probably going to ask me at some point, you know, is it dangerous out there? Well, you know, I'm in the United States at the moment, and although I'm in a very nice place in Santa Monica here, but, you know, it's certainly one of the most peaceful places, generally wild places are anyway, and the Kalahari is just that. Kalahari is centered across mainly the country of Botswana, which is a wonderful country which I'm a citizen of, and so about two-thirds, three-quarters of Botswana is Kalahari. And Kalahari is desert or semi-desert. It does extend out of Botswana into South Africa and Namibia, which are the next-door countries.
Mm-hmm.
But, so it's a great big piece of sand felt, and it's a desert because there's no permanent surface water, apart from north, where the huge Okavango River empties into it. And that creates a massive, beautiful delta of about 5,000 square miles, whatever that is, in millions and millions of acres. So it's two contrasting places. It's open, miles and miles of desert, the south and west. And in the north, there's this incredible wetland full of hippos, lions, elephants, and all the animals you imagine in Africa. And also, it's a very peaceful country. Africa has a lot of problems, as I'm sure everybody knows.
But Botswana's a democracy, isn't it?
It's a democracy, and it has been. It's really never been a colony. It was a protectorate way back.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a small population. Basically, one main tribe, so it doesn't have a lot of tribal friction. It has a lot of money because it found some diamonds.
Right.
In the 60s. And it now, I think, is the biggest supplier of gem diamonds to the world. So, if you look on the map,
as you know, everybody knows where South Africa is. It's in the very southern tip of Africa. If you go straight north along the western coast, the country straight north on that western coast of South Africa is Namibia, and the one to the right of it, immediately to the right of it, is Botswana, which is where the Kalahari is, and what Tim is talking about.
Yeah. We're very, very fortunate. It's just a wonderful country to live in, but most importantly for me is that it's very, very rich in wildlife. The huge wilderness areas, unspoiled areas left in Botswana, and of course it's a perfect place to be based. And I've been there for 37 years, I guess, living in Botswana, always working with animals in one way or another, and making films for almost the last 20 years. So,
folks, Kim, I want before we go to the break here, I wanted to remind the audience, and we're going to talk about this some more in the next segment, but about Tim's films. But the part one of his film is a two-hour series, two one-hour programs. Part one is called The Great Thirst Land, and it is this Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on PBS. And then part two is called The Flooded Desert, is the next Sunday, the 9th. So the first one's November 2nd, which is this Sunday. And then the second one is November 9th, Sunday, November 9th. Both of these at 8 p.m. for 1 hour on PBS. Don't miss these shows, folks. I've got some photographs. I've seen a little bit of the footage. It's absolutely magnificent. Get your kids together. Set them in front of the television and make them watch this film. They'll love it. I promise you. Tim Liversedge and I will be right back after these messages. It's 20 till. Stay with us. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
There's a black man with black hair. Little black man.
We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Let me remind you that Nancy Michaels, Wally Bach, David Heyman, and Walter Isaacson are going to be on our show coming up next in the next show, and I'll tell you more about them a little bit later on. I want to get back to our visit with Tim Liversedge, who's the filmmaker for an outstanding two-hour program that's split up into two different hours, two different Sundays on PBS on the Kalahari. The first segment is called The Great Thirst Land, and the second one is called The Flooded Desert. And it's a real contrast, isn't it, Tim? I mean, part of the year it's an absolute baked desert, and part of the year it's a beautiful wetland.
If we look at the Kalahari, but, you know, I think it's probably not exactly right to think of it the drier part as a wetland. But what happens, and not every year, is that we have a short rainy season. About 3 months, and sometimes doesn't rain at all, because remember that whole area is arid. But it usually gets a sprinkling, but some years we get really heavy downpour. And the first film that's coming on this weekend, on the second, is the one we call The Great Thirst Land. And that really documents what this amazing change that takes place when we do get these very heavy rains.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't always happen, and it's incredible. Some of the animals, if it doesn't happen, just wait. Either in other countries to come in, such as the flamingos, or deep underground, like we feature the bullfrog, which is an enormous frog. It's an African bullfrog, not related to the ones that you have here in the U.S. Huge thing. It weighs about 5 pounds.
Wow.
And it can remain underground, supposedly, for 5 years or more.
Hmm.
Until right conditions come up. So, and then we have huge herds of zebras, the last of the big Kalahari herds that respond again to these rains and go moving over great distances to find new pastures. But that Kalahari is mostly semi-arid. The big wetland is in the northwest, and that is a different thing. It's also Kalahari region, but that's where a huge river, the third biggest river in southern Africa, empties into the Kalahari and spreads out over this area, millions and millions of acres, and evaporates, or at least most of it evaporates.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, almost some of that is permanent wetland. And that's an area which is very different. And there you get lions, elephants, all the big animals that, you know, you expect to see in Africa. So that's the Okavango Delta. And the second film, the one coming out on the 9th, that deals with that area.
And you've got giraffes, you've got flamingos, you've got fish eagles, you've got cheetahs. Elephants, I mean, you got just basically the whole cross-section of what we think of as the great African animals, don't you?
You do, yeah. And, you know, I settled there 40 years ago, and because it was such a wonderful wilderness, and it mostly remained that way. You know, it's been very well preserved, protected. Most of the areas are sparsely populated. Main population in Botswana live along the eastern side of the country. So there's these huge wilderness areas still there, which in most part are filled with animals. It's only the southern part of the Kalahari that's actually, unfortunately, been taken over by cattle and farmers, but or cattle ranchers, I should say, rather than farmers. But most of Botswana is still as it was always, and so it's a wonderful place to visit.
Right. Tim, tell us a little bit about the people of Botswana.
Well, the people, the main group of people, and I'm not sure what percent it is, but it's probably 90% or more, are the Tswana people. And they live, there's the three major sub-tribes, but they all speak the same language, and they're the dominant, by far the dominant group of people. Mm-hmm. And the other people, there's a few Bushman people left, not too many of Bushmen nowadays. Many of them have intermarried with Tswana people. They of course speak a different language. And then there's a few people known as the Hereros or Damaras who live in the north, and they originated in Namibia, and they fled into Botswana years ago when the German colonialists fighting a war with them.
Right.
But aside from those small population groups, these Tswana people are the majority, and you know, it's and they all speak the same language.
And they're trying. I met a bunch of them, Tim, about 8 months ago. And what they told me was that they were really trying to get their economy going and build small businesses over there, aren't they?
They really are, because, you know, Botswana, it was in the early 60s, before they discovered diamonds, was very dependent on aid. It was a very poor country. Their population was about 600,000, and the economic prospects for Botswana were very poor. But then they discovered huge diamond pipes, and, you know, they've managed that wealth incredibly well. Botswana is quite different. It actually didn't have to fight a war of independence, and the people who formed the first government when it became self-governing were people with educated people who conservative people. The Botswana people, I think, fair to say, are fairly conservative, and you know, they invested the money wisely. They used it for to develop the infrastructure in Botswana,
right.
And as a result, we now have a wonderful country with paved roads everywhere. Good.
And a lot of ecotourism. That's the going out and seeing the animals and the nature. I know you got a lot of that going on. Tim, it took you 2 years to make this two-hour program, didn't it?
Yep. It's a two-hour series. And in fact, it goes back even further than that, because the first program, the Great Surf Sand, features flamingos, which, again, only come in when conditions are right.
Right.
And it's something I've been actually working on for 15 years. But
wow.
Some of the footage in this first program on the flamingos was gathered as far back as 5 years.
Wow. Tim, I've got to stop you. I want to remind people it's on Sunday night, the 2nd and the 9th of November, the 2nd and the 9th. Don't forget, folks, The Great Thirstland and the Flooded Desert by Tim Liversidge, the filmmaker. Tim, thank you very much, and good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tim. We'll see you later.
Great.
Quick break. I'll be right back. Tim Till, stay with me. Back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. My website is www.jbsba.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. It comes every week by email, and this week's article is all about the future and what you need to do, what I think you and I need to be doing to get our businesses ready for 2004 and beyond. I think our future's so bright that we're going to have to wear shades, and that's what this article is all about. And so if you'd like to get a little bit of a shot in the arm, a little bit of kick in the pants, and get your attitude and your mind out of what's been happening and into where we are really right now and where we're going, then you might like that article. And if you subscribe this week, you still got a chance to get it. So that's at jbsba.com. It's real easy. Just click on the newsletter subscription button, and it'll take you there to where you can take care of that. I want to continue a little bit on what we were just talking about with Tim Liversedge. He's gone now, but he's got a program that I really encourage you to check out on this Sunday the 2nd and the Sunday after that the 9th. Two different one-hour programs They're both on at 8 o'clock Eastern Time, 8 Eastern, 7 Central, and on PBS. And the first one is called The Great Thirstland. The second part's called the flooded desert. And I've seen some of this, folks. It's magnificent. If you're like me, if you love nature, if you love seeing what's happening in other parts of the world, you'll really enjoy those. But what I want to do now is I want to talk a little bit about free trade. I was fortunate enough, as I mentioned earlier, and as you may have heard me say before, to meet several dozen people from the South African Commercial Union, South Africa, Namibia, Botswana, Swaziland, and what else? There's another one there. I've forgotten the name of it. Five countries there in South Africa, in the southern tip of Africa. And it was so exciting to me to see how interested they are to have trade with other parts of the world, to actually come into the global marketplace. And they're not there yet. They're struggling with a lot of different things. They've got lots of challenges over there, but with all their challenges and all the as far behind as they are in a lot of areas with regard to the industrialized nation, much of Europe, most of Europe and the United States, for example, and North America, perhaps I should say, because they're so far behind, they've got a lot of stuff, they got a lot of ground to make up. But I was so excited about how excited they were about their possibilities. And it's I see that all the time. Whenever I met people from the former Soviet Union who are now being given an opportunity to be entrepreneurs. And the light that came on in their eyes when they talked about their own business, it's just so wonderful to see that light come on in their eyes. And you know that light. You've seen it in your own eyes. I've seen it in your eyes. And it's the kind of thing that's going to make the 21st century different from the 20th century, folks. And it's why I call the 21st century the century of the entrepreneur. It's just going to blossom. Entrepreneurialism is blossoming all over the world on different levels, on different scales. Some of it is absolutely leading edge, high tech, never been done before. And some of it is entrepreneurialism on a scale of maybe 100 years ago in the United States, literally. But it doesn't matter. It's still their entrepreneurialism. It's still where they are on the entrepreneurial continuum, so to speak. And that's why I'm so excited about the 21st century, because remember something that Frederick Bastiat said, and I'll the French economist, and I'll say it again. You've heard me say it before. When goods cross borders, armies don't. And the more entrepreneurs have their way and the more entrepreneurs flourish, the more goods will cross borders. And the more goods cross borders, the less armies will cross borders. And that's the reason why I believe that what we're doing right now in the Middle East is so important. It's so important that we get a handle on this, that we win the war on terrorism, that we win the war against people like Saddam Hussein, who are the enemy of entrepreneurs. They're the enemy of you and me who want to trade with each other across the nations. And we want to be able to trade with Iraqis, small business owners in Iraq and in Iran and in North Korea. We want to be able to do that. And when you and I can do that freely all around the globe, I believe we'll have peace, because entrepreneurs don't want to fight. They just want to trade. They just want to do business. And so for that reason, I'm going to wrap up by saying all those people who are in Iraq right now, and whoever is fighting terrorism around the world, whatever country you belong to, God bless you. God be with you. You're doing something very important, and you're making a sacrifice that's very important. And for that, we thank you, and we are forever in your debt. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program really is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.